This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Good day, everyone, and welcome to the U.S. Lens. I'm Ron Insana, Senior Advisor to Schroders. And if you haven't noticed already, the financial markets have had a rather negative response to the Fed's latest decision on interest rates, where it appears they moved up the timetable for an interest rate hike and also began discussing, if you will, tapering its easy money policies. Now, we had a bit of a taper tantrum on Wall Street without necessarily having the taper. What does this mean for fixed income markets? What does it mean for financial assets going forward? Joining me now, Neil Sutherland. He is fund manager for U.S. multi-sector fixed income at Schroders. And Neil, it's a pleasure to have you. And explain exactly why the financial markets reacted the way they did to the Fed's suggestion that it may dial back its easy money policies.
You know, I think that the Fed may be caught up with reality a little bit. I think what has been unusual over the last 2 or 3 months is that we've had some pretty strong data. We've had 2 inflation prints above 4%, and bond yields have actually fallen. So I think it's basically the bond market catching up with the rest of the market. If we look at, you know, other inflation proxies like financial assets, copper, gold, all of those are still suggesting reasonably firm growth. I think the bond market was something of the anomaly over the last 2 or 3 months.
But some of the inflation indicators that we watch in real time relative to sometimes the Fed, you know, looking a little bit in the rearview mirror on data, lumber has fallen almost 40%. Copper's come down from its recent high. Inflation break-evens appear to be rolling over. Is there any reason to doubt the Fed's word that inflation is transitory in the way in which we're experiencing right now? And that whatever move they make in the future is going to be rather gentle, at least to start.
You know, I think that's true about commodities. But if you look at broader commodity indices, we're still close to 10-year highs. And sure, lumber is off 30 or 40%, but we're still 200 or 300% higher than where we were 12 to 18 months ago. So I think there is an element of truth in that. But, you know, if you look at the Fed is, you know, banging on about inflation being transitory. But if we're honest, they've got no more insight into that than anybody else. And I think if you look at the circumstances in terms of the how stimulative policy is at the moment, if you look at even core GDP, so excluding some of the more volatile elements, on a 3-month basis, core GDP is running north of 8% at the moment. So I think they hope that it will be transitory. And, you know, somewhat astonishingly, obviously, their projection gets back straight back to 2% in the next 2 or 3 years. But I think that is as yet undecided.
Yeah, let me ask you about that, because along with inflation getting back to normal, that would also assume that growth would normalize, if you will, and not stay with core GDP growth at around 8% and probably coming back again towards what we've seen over past history, irrespective of the stimulus. Some of that is going to wear off. So if we get back to normal, what's so bad about that from a financial market perspective?
You know, I think more today, more than any time in my career, we're completely dependent on the evolution of Fed policy and particularly real yields. I mean, last year was amazing. That it was a pretty terrible year for the economy, but it was a pretty fantastic year for financial assets. And I think this year could be something of the opposite. And I think if you wanted a one factor model to explain why financial assets did so well last year, just overlay the drop in real yields versus the S&P 500, and it's almost a perfect fit. And I think today that's the biggest vulnerability. It's not so much inflation. It's not so much Fed policy. It's whether real yields move higher. And yesterday we actually saw real yields move up 10 to 15 basis points. And that did cause quite a bit of sort of consternation in markets. But even today, looking at a sort of longer term historical context, real yields are still close to the lowest we've been in a generation. So I think that is where the vulnerability really lies in markets.
So let me ask you about that. I mean, we've had environments where real yields have been positive and financial assets have done fine. We've also had bubbles in which real yields have gone negative. The after-tax cost of capital has gone negative, and we've seen financial assets explode. How do we normalize without getting some then major disruption in financial assets if indeed the economy is returning to a more normal trajectory and the Fed comes out of its emergency mode?
I mean, the honest answer is going to be difficult. I mean, if you look at cash, if you look at short treasuries, the Fed has made them almost investable. I mean, if you look at real yields on five-year treasuries, they are sort of negative 1.5 to 2%. They've never, ever been this low. So without the sort of alternatives of cash and short bonds being so unappealing because the Fed has made them that, I think other financial assets would not be nearly as high as they were. But the reality is, when you've got such an indebted economy, when you're so reliant on this, the Fed is probably going to manipulate yields lower for a prolonged period.
Explain that if you would, because and Jay Powell said in his commentary and news conference that we're nowhere near liftoff, liftoff being described or understood as an increase in short-term interest rates. Are you expecting then that as the Fed begins to normalize policy, they will try to push down longer rates? Or what kind of manipulation are you describing here?
I mean, I think the manipulation is probably going to be on the balance sheet side. I mean, I think they were clear that the meeting said yesterday they moved to, you know, a couple of rate hikes in 2023. Yeah. I think that the mistake they made in the last hiking cycle was to simultaneously try and draw down the balance sheet and move interest rates simultaneously. And we saw that that basically made the economy roll over fairly quickly. So I think they're going to be pretty patient on the interest rate side. But I do think you're probably going to see some, at least announcement regarding the balance sheet later this year. And they'll maybe move to tapering sort of early next year.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
Okay, so what if that's the case? I mean, why did the market? And it's hard to say that the market responded violently because the Dow was down 0.75%. The other major averages even less so. Just when you're at 34,000 on the Dow, 200 still strikes fear in the heart of men, if you will, because it's a triple digit move. It was just a mild tantrum. Is there anything really for the markets to get upset about, or can they continue higher against this backdrop of semi normalization?
You know, I think the market was a little bit complacent. You know, as I said, I think the anomaly has been the bond market rally over the last few years. And if you contextualize it, you know, the real yields are still astonishingly low. You know, we did move, basically the market moved to price what the Fed discounted in their dots. So they went from pretty much nothing to a couple of rate hikes in 2023. And the market moved to discount that. So I think it was a little bit of indigestion. But if bond yields remain where they are at the moment, I don't think there's anything to get particularly concerned about when it comes to risk assets. And, you know, Jay Powell said himself that the dots are, don't take them seriously. I mean, I think there's one thing you can guarantee about the dots, they're going to be wrong. And it was quite interesting that the market or euro dollars moved immediately to discount what they had done in the dots. But, you know, bear in mind, people are now saying, OK, we've got two rate hikes by 2023. But the sort of divergence between members, it ranges. We've got like five saying no rate hikes. And then we've got, I think, three or four saying 1.5.
Yeah, let me follow up on that. And I know this gets in the weeds of Fed policy and the way in which they go about their decision making. In the post great financial crisis environment, the dot plot was introduced and it gave us a range of estimates among individual Fed participants as to what they not only were forecasting in the economy, but what they thought the Fed should do. And back then, it was typically the outliers who had the more aggressive stance, calling, if you will, on the Fed to raise rates before the economy had fully recovered. Do we look at the dot plots today in the same context, that these are folks with divergent views who don't represent consensus or don't represent, maybe even more importantly, Jay Powell's thinking on what's going to happen in the future?
Yeah, I think you need to take your cue from Powell. I think the dots have become probably less relevant than they were, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, because the Fed mandate has subtly changed. They've gone from being a little bit more reactive, if you like, since they've moved to average inflation targeting. And ultimately, I don't think it's going to be the Fed which decides policy in the longer term. I think it's going to be the bond market. So Powell can be as dovish as he's like. He can say that inflation is transitory. But ultimately, if the bond market decides that it isn't, I think that will force them to act.
All right. So then let me ask you about fixed income in particular. Without making any specific recommendations, as you look around for value, it doesn't seem that at the moment there's anything in fixed income that's underloved. I mean, you look at high yield and it's relatively steady and spreads are tight. People are interested in municipal bonds and have been buying those. How do you find value in a market that still seems to be reasonably fully priced?
Yeah, I mean, the simple answer is you've got to be patient. You know, I think if you go back 12 months ago, you know, this time last year, Q1, we were really, really optimistic on the market. It was pretty much the best opportunity, particularly in credit markets, that we had seen in almost a decade. But what is remarkable now is how quickly things have recovered. We've not just gone from fair value, we've gone from cheap to fair value to pretty much as expensive as we've been in a decade again. I mean, just to put some numbers on it, if you take investment grade credit or you take high yield, looking at the spreads versus treasuries in those sectors, we're pretty much in the bottom decile over the last decade. Just to say that another way, spreads have been wider 90% of the time. So it's kind of a strange dichotomy. We've got this very strong economy, an early cycle economy in many ways, but late cycle valuations. So that does create something of a quandary when it comes to investing.
So Neil, given what you just said about the level of pricing in some of these asset classes or sub-asset classes when it comes to fixed income being near perfection or relatively rich, what do you do during this period when you're waiting for opportunities to arise? Do you simply hold cash, as some investors have recently suggested?
Yeah, I think you want more liquidity. There's no doubt about that. I mean, the risk reward currently today is pretty skewed. So a little bit more cash, a little bit more optionality is sensible.
Neil, let me ask you a final question then. So if cash provides a negative real return and there are richly priced assets in fixed income, what exactly do you go out and look for in order to, you know, help you bide time but still get a positive return on your money?
I think there are some options in higher quality sort of credit assets, be it in the securitized space, be it in investment grade credit. You know, the returns are clearly not going to be what they were 4 or 5 years ago, but you can pick up incrementally, you know, a little bit of yield above cash. So I think that's not a bad place to park your money in higher quality investment grade credit and maybe some AAA securitized assets and just wait and roll down the curve. But clearly, the options are not as attractive as they were a few years ago.
All right, Neil, always a pleasure. Thanks for being with us today.
Here's what else investors are talking about. Schroeder's economists recently upgraded their forecasts for global economic growth. However, this move was skewed towards developed markets and encompassed only a small increase to their projections for output in the emerging world. Economist David Rees says it's important to look beyond the lackluster headline figures to understand the differing macroeconomic dynamics in emerging markets. You can find out more by reading David's article, What Does Sluggish Emerging Market Growth Mean for Investors? At schroeders.com/insights, where you can also find videos, podcasts, and much, much more. Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. If you want to find out more, check out our website, schroeders.com/the investor download. You can also get in contact with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows at schroederspodcast@schroeders.com. Please remember to subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to leave a review. We're now doing one show a week, which will be available every Thursday from 5 p.m. UK time. Thanks very much for listening, but above all, keep safe and go well. Cheers.